This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kasulski and Faggy Stern.
Well, good morning, everybody. This is 101.9 High FM, and you're tuned in to the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. I'm Adel Kasulski.
And I'm Faggy Stern.
Welcome to another show, and thank you so much for all the feedback that we do receive in the course of this week, of the weeks that, you know, that we do post. It's actually quite heartening.
Absolutely. I actually got a very interesting question the other day on one of our posts on WhatsApp. So it's definitely worth being on our WhatsApp line.
I had somebody call me today and ask me something else also. So it looks like it's working. So keep it up. Just by the way, before we do start our show, if you do want to participate and get information on a daily basis, you may through our WhatsApp group. It is admin run, which means that you're not spammed. You can even leave it on silent. And you just got to give your name and your number to info@firefm.com, and we'll gladly join you. And if there's anybody you would like to speak, us to speak to, please let us know. We're always looking for new speakers and new topics. But talking about topics, today we are going to continue our discussion from last week. We had on Richard Sutton, and we spoke about resilience. And one of the aspects of resilience is recognizing the trauma that we all carry. Now, all of us have different lives, and we are found in different circumstances, and we all suffer trauma to some extent, some to much greater extent than others. But I think there always needs to be an ongoing conversation about trauma. So we've reinvited back onto High FM one of our favorites, Toby. Toby is a counseling psychologist, seeing individual clients and couples at a place called Psych Central in Johannesburg. She's passionate about our early life attachments. And Toby has studied parent-infant psychotherapy and does work where she supports new mothers on their journey to motherhood, along with having this lens around the impact of attachment in much of the work she does with adults and couples. And by focusing on early attachments and relationships in our lives, and how they shape much of our future, she works on exploring an individual's past experiences and how we can journey to restoring and repairing parts of ourselves to walk towards optimum mental health. And we've had a lot of discussion with Toby Steiner on this, but today we're going to broaden it because both Toby, our guest, and Faggy had the honor and privilege to go on a solidarity tour to Israel, and they witnessed a lot of trauma at a base level, and we're going to unpack it a little bit more because it does need to be spoken about. Toby, thank you for joining the show.
Thank you for having me again. It's so nice to be here.
Welcome.
Okay, I think we're going to unpack all that I've said, but I think let's again have a definition about trauma so those that are new to this conversation or hearing it for the first time understand what we're talking about.
Absolutely. I think that trauma has just become a word that we're so used to. It's just part of our lexicon. And in some ways, I think that that's a lucky thing and a good thing. It's so interesting because so much of what I understand about trauma has been formed by Gabor Mate. And what I think is really interesting about that and why it's quite political is actually because he has quite an interesting view around Israel. And so I'm going to put aside some of his political views and actually focus on a lot of his understanding and research around trauma. And I also just finished watching Sheryl Sandberg's documentary, which is entitled Screams Before Silence. It's quite a harrowing account of what many women went through, on October 7th. So it is, viewer discretion is advised. But one of the things that I found so profoundly moving was there was a woman who's the head of a new civil commission of what happened on October 7th. And she says that what happened on October 7th, we're not only going to need to redefine international criminal law, but we're also going to have to redefine trauma as well. Mm. And I think, you know, what Faggy and I witnessed, there's so much of understanding trauma. And I've been on the show before where we've discussed trauma. And even discussing it now with this new lens of what's been going on in Israel. And I feel like I want to also maybe touch on a collective experience of being a Jew anywhere in the world, and not to do comparative grief or comparative suffering, but just the fact that on some level we're all experiencing different levels of trauma.
Okay, so let's go back to find trauma, like as a start.
Yes.
What we're talking about, and maybe a little bit of mental health, or are they the same thing?
Right. So trauma actually comes from a Greek word which means wound. And touching on what you said before, what you discussed a little bit before with Richard Sutton in terms of resilience, is that it is in our woundedness and how we cope with it that will determine much of our behavior and informs the way we view the world. And for many of us, trauma impacts so many areas of our life. And that's that idea of through lots of work, through processing a lot of the trauma, resilience could come from it. But the analogy that Gabor Maté uses, which I think is specifically helpful, is this idea of imagining if a person has been in a car accident and someone sustains a concussion. The accident is what happened to the person, and the injury is what lasts. So if we think about that, trauma is the psychic injury, which can be lodged in a person's mind, in their nervous system, in their body, and which they carry this incident that happened to them that can be triggered at any time. Bessel van der Kolk, who's a psychiatrist, who's written the book, The Body Keeps the Score, also one of the forerunners in helping us understand trauma, speaks about trauma being pre-verbal. And he means two things. He means that trauma not only could be at a time in a person's life where they are pre-verbal, meaning at a very young age, but he talks about the fact that even when we are at a later stage where we have language, where we have wounds, so much of trauma could be in areas of the brain and in areas of the body that words cannot even express. And often when we see the accounts of survivors that have experienced all that they've gone through from October 7th, people who interview them, and they themselves will often say there are no words. Because that is what trauma is. It's that it is that what a person can almost express is almost like the tip of the iceberg of actually what's going on much beneath the surface.
Well, then can I ask a question?
How
do you treat trauma then? Because that rings very true, that when somebody says, how do you when it's like so pre-verbal?
That's why obviously there are some people that can articulate themselves more than others as well. So not only can't they find the words, but some people literally can't articulate themselves and how they're actually feeling.
I think we are living in an age where talk therapy is much more common. Talk therapy is, you know, has much less stigma. And I think we're also learning that there are so many other ways in which trauma has to be released from the body. Breathwork, psychedelics, there's a whole new world that is researching just this, because yes, trauma talk therapy may work for some people, and for some it may be just a part of healing that traumatic experience. But what I was thinking of in terms of just, you know, the accounts of what happened, and I think that hearing people say post-Holocaust, you know, never again, I almost think of this time post-Holocaust, pre-October 7th, that you would hear people say never again. And there was almost a sense on our part of, I guess, a bit of empathy or sympathy to a person saying that. And it was like, this could never happen again. And to see that something, this level of trauma could happen to individuals, could happen to a country, could happen to us as a nation. I think that on some level, because trauma is, part of trauma is not being seen and not being known, I think that as a collective, there's something about us, someone saying our experience right now is being denied. And for Jews across the globe, that feels like a level of trauma as well.
I think that's unbelievably profound. I've got about 110 questions, but I'm going to hold back. We are going for a small commercial break, and we will be back. This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kasilski and Fagie Stern.
Welcome back. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. We're talking with Toby Steiner. We are talking about trauma. We're unpacking it a little bit more, particularly in light of October 7th and particularly in light that both Toby and Fagie were in Israel on a solidarity. We were speaking just before the break, Tommy, that we kind of, we said never again, we kind of like left it And like it's now being unpacked and we're having a problem verbalizing it. But I kind of like felt that we as the Jewish people are carrying intergenerational trauma, that we've had it all the time. It's not something that, oh, this was the Holocaust, this is now, and now I don't know how to deal with it. But that it's not only even about the Holocaust, it's about the Inquisition, it's about the, you know, the Romans, it's about the time of Esther, it is about the Crusade, it's about all of these things. I kind of like always have felt, well, certainly for myself, and I haven't had any outward trauma as we're going to discuss, but always feel like that I'm like sitting in two worlds. Like I'm always watching my back and have I got a plan B? Because I always have to run away. Like surely that's intergenerational.
It's so interesting because Peter Levine talks about this, that trauma is actually a fracturing of a self and your relationship to the world. And if you're saying this, we carry intergenerational trauma. One of the most, I mean, profoundly impactful studies that I remember reading about when I was studying was that when they did a study with mother rats, and they put a smell of like a rose or a quite a strong smell in a cage, and they gave a female rat a shock as she smelled the certain smell. And two studies that they did afterwards was that the rats who were pregnant at the time, the pups that they gave birth to, when that smell would be put in the cage, the pup rat would experience a reaction. And then further than that, they actually found that rat pups that were born, even after the mother was not pregnant while the shocks were being given, also had a reaction when that smell was in the cage.
It's literally in the DNA.
Literally. So when we talk about this, there is a sense of that as a Jewish nation, we've carried this trauma and the generations that we've come after the Holocaust. I think for me, one of the things that really hit me so profoundly was that I lived with a naive sense, I guess, that this could not happen again. And when you go to the Nova Festival site and you see the museum where all the cars are piled up, and you have this eerie sense of so many parallels with the Holocaust in 2024, where there's social media and there's a way in which the world could possibly respond differently and it hasn't, I think that is quite surprising.
I think social media, though, is a huge thing because it's in our face all day, every day. And we're also obsessed with understanding what really is going on, especially in Israel. And, you know, I feel like, you know, Toby, I don't know if you can add to this, is being so far away from Israel and from being around the people that had those experiences and really understanding what's going on the ground. And just seeing it kind of from a social media aspect and being, you know, kind of afraid just from watching that, but from really physically being there and speaking to the people face to face and understanding what their traumas really are on the ground, I feel like they're also two completely different worlds. We don't really understand until you're physically there and see it.
Absolutely. And I think that the people that we met along this way was one of the, we kept commenting on this, that so many people would turn around to us and say, thank you for coming. And it almost felt embarrassing on our part. You know, we had come over there to in some way witness, and I think speaking back to this documentary that Sheryl Sandberg has made, I don't think we can also undermine what bearing witness means in terms of someone who has been through trauma and just how deeply impactful something from what we think as simple as bearing witness, what it means to people in Israel. If it was a waitress at a restaurant and we said, you know, we're here on a solidarity tour, and she became emotional, to women whose husbands are called up, to evacuees who are staying in the hotel. So many people were profoundly moved by the fact that people are bearing witness to what they're going through. And I don't think we can undermine that.
But doesn't that also, again, I'm not negating that, doesn't that also go again, mush back into all our traumas? You know, like you went to bear witness. And again, I'm not judging anybody that goes to bear witness. There's been lots of solidarity tours. I myself wanted to go. But when you go, I'm sure I would have got triggered with all my intergenerational stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like, how can one stand in a place of trauma, bear witness, and navigate through it?
I think one of the most important things to know for us in any of these experiences is that two things could be true. You know, I had an experience, and I was laughing with someone if I would even bring this up, you know, that when I arrived in Israel, I didn't have my bag for 3 days. And it was ridiculous considering in the context of what we were there for. So I didn't have my luggage. And there were definitely moments when, you know, I didn't have contact lens solution that it was very frustrating for me. And then there was this part of me that kept saying, but in comparison to what you're witnessing, how can you even compare? Because I think that we can hold two things are true at the same time. I think, you know, I'm just listening to Sapir Cohen, who was a hostage who's come to South Africa to speak to people. And when she tells her story, the juxtaposition of someone who went through what she went through, and everyone keeps commenting on her name because Sapir means sapphire, and the light that she is, she tells a story that a terrorist drew a memorial candle on the wall with her name on it. And she turns to him and says, why are you doing that? And he said to her, I hate you. You are my enemy. I hate you. But somehow when you are here in this place, there is life.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And it is so profoundly moving when she tells you the story, because I think that, you know, touching on the resilience idea is that there is something about Israeli people, and there is something about the Jewish nation that, yes, we carry all this intergenerational trauma, and because two things are true, somehow there is this power and resilience. I encourage anyone to go find Sapir Cohen's story on YouTube, because someone who could talk about such darkness and such trauma, and yet when she walked out, everyone asked her, when she got out that UN car, she came out with the biggest smile. And in all her interviews, they ask her, they say, why did you do that? She said, I wanted that to be a beacon of hope. That's who I wanted to be. I wanted to come out with this big smile on my face.
Interesting. After the show last week, we sat down and we spoke a little bit. And one of the stories that I told Adel was when we went to that Al-Yakim's family to be Menachem Avil and to visit them and to visit the family, you know, in their time of mourning. And like Adel, what you were saying also about us being part of their trauma and being part of, and like witnessing what they're going through, so much of the time we would leave more empowered. And as hard as it was to see and understand the trauma, like what Toby, you're saying, is as a Jewish nation and as a Jewish people, the amount of like strength that we gave each other or that they gave us was unbelievable. I mean, we literally went to this house, to this area, and the woman, the mother literally did not know where her son was for 7 months. She didn't know if he was alive or dead. She thought that he was taken hostage all this time. She stood up. She came to the group of women who she did not know anyone. She didn't know anything about us. She came and she spoke to us and she gave us strength. And one of the biggest things, especially you talk about resilience, one of the biggest things that she said to us was, we are so happy that we did not know, I don't know exactly those words, but we are grateful that we did not know for 7 months where he was, because we, as a family, were able to give strength to the hostage families and to daven with them for their children and for their family members that they should be released. And we could give them the strength that they needed as well. Had we not known, we wouldn't have been able to give them that strength. I mean, that's not resilience with the trauma that they've been through. And, you know, for a family that didn't know where their son was, whether he was dead or alive, he wasn't even taken hostage. But how is that for resilience? How is that for a Jewish mother standing up and telling us that information?
Tova, do you want
absolutely
to talk to that?
You know, I think carrying on from what Faye said, the family was in different groups. And just to touch on this experience, when the brother we were talking to spoke about the fact that he was called up into the army, he knew his brother was a security guard at the Nova Festival, and he was an officer, so he had a platoon of men who were following him. Gets to Nova Festival and he has orders that are separate to Nova Festival. He has orders to go and do separate fighting, but he goes to Nova and tries to see if he could find his brother. And in that moment, he's caught between two different sides of what he should do. And the one is, does he stay here and look for his brother, or does he go and save his country? Does he fight to find his brother, or does he fight for his country? And you can almost feel that like grappling that he went through, and he looked at all of us and he said, in that moment, I chose that I had to go and fight for my country. And when you meet people who it's not even an idealism. It's a deep sense of we live for this land. And if we need to the opposite for this land, that's also what we will do. And it comes from a deep belief somewhere, which is also some deep resilience. And I think it comes off the back of the fact that on some level, even before October 7th, so many Israelis, as we know, are living with some level of trauma. There's often rockets, there's, you know, suicide bombings, there's a lot of trauma within their society already, somewhere. Mm-hmm. And you know, we can try to understand this psychologically. And I think there's also a spiritual side of the way that people are made and that they were endowed with some deep power to somehow manage intense trauma.
This is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kasilski and Fagie Stern.
Welcome back. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show. We're talking with Toby Steiner. We are talking about trauma. We're unpacking it a little bit more, particularly in light of October 7th and particularly in light that both Toby and Fagie, I think it becomes a way of life. You know, like when you're put in a very difficult situation and again, then you eventually don't know that there's anything more. We had family that came to South Africa. And they live in Jerusalem, and they weren't directly hurt by it, you know, except for maybe running down into the bomb shelter, et cetera, et cetera. And I was talking to my family, and I was saying that there was another family here in South Africa that I heard from, a member of the family, their family came, and their family was, I think, more involved with like direct trauma, that they went out on a Saturday night to a shopping center. And they passed the restaurant and they had firecrackers wishing somebody happy birthday. And the next minute, their family member was actually under a table, you know, with his hand over his head, and they had trauma. And I turned around to my family. I said, where you're at? And you know what she said to me? She said, I didn't realize I had trauma until I caught the plane. And she said, I'm sitting in your lovely garden here in Johannesburg, but every time a plane flies over, she says, I can feel that bodily reaction. So I think there is a pervasive sense of trauma across the entire society, whether they recognize it or not. The guy that climbed under the table, you know, in the shopping center didn't recognize it either. You know, he came home, he said he was fine. He survived, everything was fine until he just heard the crack of the thing. So what are the major impacts are you seeing of trauma in particularly the Israeli society?
So I think if we could just touch on the generalized sense of actually what the impacts of trauma are. So the first is that trauma separates a person from their body. And this could be any form of trauma. And again, referencing Sheryl Sandberg's documentary, especially in those cases of sexual trauma, the one woman recounts a dissociative experience that she had to experience in order to manage the trauma, which would be a response to something like that. Trauma also would actually within as a carry on from that, cut someone off from their gut feeling because you can't trust what's going on in your body. You've had to leave your body. So that's the second impact of it. And trauma actually limits our response to be flexible. Trauma impacts our ability to say, okay, whatever comes my way, maybe I'll be able to manage this. I don't have to be so rigid. Trauma creates a sense of needing to be much more in control in a very rigid way. Again, speaking to one of the survivors who gave a testimony in Sheryl Sandberg's documentary, she speaks about her shame-based view of herself. Even though intellectually she could say that there was nothing I could do in that kind of situation, one of the deep impacts, I think, is how trauma distorts the view of the world. And through all of these, and especially dissociation, trauma will alienate a person from the present. It will be very hard for them to be in the present. And Sapir Cohen, who is a hostage that I spoke about before, one of the most emotional parts of the story that she tells is that she says, I came back changed and my family talks to me as if I'm the same person.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so we were talking about resilience, and we're also highlighting the resilience of the Israeli nation and the Jewish nation. It is also important, where two things are true, to know that what's going on in Israel right now on every single level means that there's a level of trauma that I don't even think can be dealt with properly now, even though they're offering as much psychological services as they can. Because the reality is that everyone is still really in the thick of it. So it's very hard.
You know what I'm saying? The threat hasn't gone away. They haven't gone back to peace.
Like, no.
When eventually your mind gets used to the fact that, okay, there's another 100 missiles that have come in today. It doesn't matter. It's from the north, from the south, or whatever have you.
Absolutely.
And that becomes normal. You can't. But it kind of like begs the question then, just like looking at it in this like wide framework, that I'm like, as we are talking, I'm kind of like getting a deeper sense of respect and understanding to those that came out of the Holocaust. You know, as much as you intellectualize the Holocaust, as much as you learn of it, imagine they went through this for like five to 10 solid years of the most horrific things, and they still came out and, you know, built families. Maybe some had a lesser degree of religious belief. Some came out more religious. You know, I remember one woman we interviewed once at our synagogue. She was an Auschwitz survivor. And when she finished talking about her harrowing experience, somebody said to her, "And so why do you still believe in God?" Which is one of the, you know, the famous things. Like, how can you God to help? And she turned around incredulously and said, "Well, how could I not believe in God?" She said, "That was a walking miracle every single day. I've just told you the story. You think that that happened haphazard? That I actually walked out of that place of hell?" And that like flipped everything for me.
I think even more, if we could, you know, the survivors of the Holocaust, like we have a generation that we're living in now where, you know, when I referenced Bessel van der Kolk, he was a psychiatrist just post-Vietnam, where they were coining the term PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. The concept didn't exist until then. So post-Holocaust, there wasn't even a language around trauma. There wasn't a place for people to be able to say, this is why your body is feeling this way. Or even the way I've just described what happens to you when you've gone through trauma. You know, we are in a time where there is so many more resources. At the same time, I think that October 7th, there's almost a before and after in terms of trauma.
Okay. So like, what type of examples did you see there that you, that the people that you met, that you saw, as a general rule, affecting them, you know, the trauma affected them?
It was actually interesting to watch you, Toby, from like the perspective of a psychologist, you know, through the lens of a psychologist, the way you were reacting to people, it's interesting how you kind of viewed them differently to the rest of us. So it's fascinating to hear what you have to say.
It's actually so interesting because I feel like I'm processing and downloading so much of the experience now. I think that, you know, we were in the hotel, we're staying in a hotel, and then you see children running around, and we came to realize that there were evacuees living in the hotel with us. These are families who have been living in the north, and it was too dangerous for them to live there. And so they've been evacuated to a hotel in Jerusalem, which sounds really nice, except that the woman who we met, whose room was across from ours, had two children who are on the autism spectrum. They've been moved out of their home. They've been moved to different schools. And at the end of the day, the constricted space of being in a hotel all the time, what it does to these families where their whole lives have been turned upside down, they're actually living in a state of no man's land. They do not, they're being told that they'll move back in September, but no one can actually tell them that. And on some level, this is, you know, in the big scheme of trauma, they're safe, they're housed, there's no direct threat to their lives. But since the beginning of this conflict, 240,000 Israelis have been evacuated from their homes. That's 250,000 people have been evacuated from their homes. The government is doing everything it can. Just that sheer number of people who on their level are going to have to process that. I think that's just like the, you know, the basic stage of what some levels of trauma could be around that.
We're speaking to Toby Steiner. We're unpacking trauma, maybe a little bit more on a community level as opposed to a personal level. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kozulski and Faggy Stern.
Thank you for joining us. This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show, and we are discussing trauma with Toby. So what was the general impact on all of us? I can tell you as a friend, Frankie came back quite traumatized. Like I felt like there were times like you needed space to unravel.
No, we needed time to process. I think it took us a good week, even on our group. You know, when we met each other in the streets, we would say how we're feeling completely exhausted, completely broken. There were times that people would just sit in their cars and kind of cry for a little bit. There was a lot of processing to do.
I think that you, like you spoke about before, Faggy, there's a way in which we have social media, and because we think we have such access to what's going on, and we were also deeply moved by October 7th, and you feel as if you're feeling, and then you go there and you meet people, and some of that reality becomes so, it hits you in such a real way that this is actually how people are living. This is the impact of it, and the impact of it on every level of society, that there's so much trauma. You know, we talk about the evacuees, the hostages' families, soldiers, these young men. We met a man who, you know, the concept of, they call him Miloim, which is that you are in army service. You could be called up at any time. So this was a man who had been with his family. He had been with his seven children. His wife was pregnant with their eighth. And on the 7th of October, he was called, and his job was to take bodies and make sure that they are ready for burial. And he, that juxtaposition of him having to move from one extreme to the other, you know, these, the Zaka volunteers who make sure that a person is buried as whole as possible. So many of them said they could not go home to their families after what they had seen. So I think that we're seeing that every level of society is affected in Israel. And I wonder what the country is going to look like. How will people move forward from this? How will people manage this level of trauma? And one of the things that I think is so important, and, you know, it's connected to grief, but I think it impacts this trauma understanding that we have now, is that complicated grief is a form of grief where it's not publicly acknowledged or supported. And sometimes complicated grief could say, for example, someone who suffered a miscarriage, where they have grief over something that isn't a public understanding of what this person could be going through, and yet they themselves are going through a grief experience. And I keep thinking of what can we do? What can we do here in South Africa? What can we do? And it sounds small, but when you meet with people there who say, thank you for coming to witness, I think that we talk about it, that we value it, that we share stories of people, and we make sure that it is counted as a loss. This is valued. This is publicly supported. This is acknowledged. We make sure that this trauma isn't something that is happening in a faraway land, that it is something that has actually impacted us as a nation.
That was the next question I was going to ask you. I mean, is there a light at the end of the tunnel? You know, like right now, I'm feeling quite in despair, as if there is reality that while, you know, there is the, while we're going into here and we blew up 20 terrorists here and we caught so many here, and it's like become part of, you know, like what specials are there in the shopping center right now? What is the light at the end of the tunnel? How do people heal from this? Or is it just the fact that we have to build a resilience?
I mean, this isn't a psychological answer, but when I think of a story Sapir Cohen told, she said that one of the terrorists showed her on the TV Hostage Square in Tel Aviv, where there were Jews coming together. And he said to her, when you are together, when your nation is together, you are strong. And she said,
exactly last week, when we were talking about resilience, and Richard Sutton was explaining how resilience is really, you know, when we all have that love for each other and we have a community and we feel like we have that support, we definitely are more resilient.
That's exactly what she says. And she says, when people ask her, how do you do what you do? How do you go around the world, you know, be away from home, meet all these strange people, stand in front of so many people speaking English when her first language is Hebrew? And she said, because my mission in the world is to share with people that as a Jewish nation, we need to be united as one. And I think that that is something that we can all take. I think that this is across the board of no matter what kind of Jew you are, how affiliated you are, how you identify, the concept of how do we unite in every way. And I think that there are, there's going to be, have to be some new development. And again, what Sapir Cohen said, which I thought was very, very profound, was she said that when you're in the darkness, you find new things. And she talks about all the new things she found about herself. And perhaps there will be some new ways of dealing with trauma. There will be some new developments where people are going to have to learn a whole new different way of defining trauma and what we do for it. And I do hope that at the time in the world that we are at, where there has been so much research and all these mushrooming of all these different types of, excuse the pun, all these different types of ways to manage trauma, that there will be a way that, that people will be helped. And I think that when we think we're far away and there's nothing we can do, there's always a way. There's always a way to bring more light into the world.
Well, can I suggest, I mean, like, as you're talking, my mind is racing. Like, one of the things that you can do if you you find it even too difficult to identify with what's going on in Israel, mm-hmm. or you don't grapple with it, or you feel like I'm a nobody, you know, just like living on some road in the middle of Johannesburg, is mm-hmm. when you go out and you are with another person in their pain. And it can be a personal thing. Somebody can have a personal pain and you say, I'm with you, I hear you. Doing an act of kindness, that is healing trauma. Meaning, I think maybe what is being demanded of us, and I'm just talking out aloud here, is that it's demanding mm-hmm. of each and every one of us to be more sensitive, to be more respectful, to be more cognitive of the fact that everybody, as you said, is going through something. And, you know, not to be that, you know, what I see is what I get, and I'm judgmental and bitchy about it and moaning about it, or, you know, being resentful about it, but actually us healing ourselves from the trauma and then being there for other people and just understanding, hey, everybody's got something that they're going through.
I have two things to add to this also, though, Toby. Like, the first day we arrive in Israel, we go see the wives or the milieuim of the, you know, soldiers that are going to be called up to serve in the army. And as South African women, watching the strength of these Israeli women, you know, to think that they would even come and visit strangers and sit down and have a breakfast with strangers and share their story with strangers. I'm not too sure, as a South African woman from Johannesburg with all our luxuries, that I would even want to get out of bed and go and be with people or tell people my story, you know, or tell them about my trauma. And the one thing, you know, they got so much strength, like you say, is we really do have to think out of the box. We have to take ourselves out of our little worlds. And like you say, Adel, do something for someone else and kind of extend ourselves more, I think, than we generally do. And take ourselves out of our comfort zones also, yes. and do something mm-hmm. for someone else, something that we wouldn't generally do. And then just to add that one more story of when we were in the Nova Festival and had listening to someone speak. And as he was speaking, Adel, there were these blasts going off. And we kept on thinking that bombs were coming towards us. They were so loud. And just for us standing there, like you say, you know, about the trauma, we stood there and we kept on shaking and we kept on getting petrified that the bombs were coming towards us. And then you look to your right and there's a bunch of soldiers in the forest of the Nova Festival waiting to go into Gaza. And what are they doing? They're playing guitar and singing songs and dancing around the trees and having an amazing time together. And I think that's also one thing to speak on is like, what is our choice in life? Like, what do we choose to see and how do we choose to respond to something?
This is a very interesting point, and Toby would like you to comment on that. We're just going to go for a little break.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show with Adel Kosilski and Faggy Stern.
Welcome back. This is 101.9 FM. We're having a very, very fascinating conversation, and I think one that's like very stirring. We have a couple of minutes left. Maybe let's talk about what, you know, Faggy just said before the break.
I think we can tie that all together. You know, we live again in such a juxtaposition in South Africa where around us there are many less fortunate than us. You know, when you talk about being in this in this kind of bubble that we live in. And somewhere, I think along the way, we've focused on making our life as easy as possible. And I think when we met the wives of the reservists who were having babies while their husbands were going out into Gaza, not knowing if their goodbye for the weekend was an actual goodbye, and their deep sense of resilience and strength, I think it was, you know, inspiring in terms of we avoid challenge and hardship at all costs. And whilst we would not want that imposed upon us, how are we finding ways in which, like you say, we move out of our box, we move out of our comfort zone, we go out of our ways in whichever ways we can. And that image that Faggy is alluding to of these soldiers with guitars singing that, like, we are believers, the sons of believers, and they're singing in that, you know, songs about Mashiach coming, and they're about to go into Gaza while bombs are going off around us. And Sapir speaks about while she was in captivity, while she was in a tunnel, and she made a choice to have a positive energy. She made a choice to have a positive attitude. And I've always found that as a little bit like, is it naive, or is it a little bit like, you know, are you actually being real with yourself about what's going on around you? And she talks about that the positivity was the thing that got her through, and the positivity was the thing that got her released. And I think that with all that we're seeing, on the one hand, we have to do more, and on the one hand, we have to, you know, do more for others. And at the same time, I think it really is a point of how do we choose to focus on positivity? How do we choose that that's the energy? How do we choose to focus on the power of us as a nation? How do we choose to focus on all the good that we are blessed with? And holding two things are true, holding what's going on there and how we have to bear witness, and we have to make sure that people know what is actually going on. And at the same time, making sure that you yourself is strong, you feel strong enough, you feel resilient, you feel focused on the positive, and holding both those two things at the exact same time.
And I think to conclude on these very wise words that you've said, is to emphasize again to everybody, as we said right in the beginning, that because the understanding of trauma is expanding in the world, there are many ways to look at your trauma. So there's no need anymore to hide the trauma, put it under the carpet, pretend it's not there, freeze, fly, flight, do whatever it is that you're doing. You can actually address it in a very kind way, whether it is through talk therapy or through many of the things we've discussed, baby, trauma release therapy, body talk, psychedelics, anything that is going to help you. Because one thing that I heard from Rabbi Chase Taub, he was actually gave a very powerful podcast about 2 weeks ago. He said that we're the generation of healing. We've come to be healed. Wow. And it's kind of like the calling of this generation, whether you've had your own personal trauma, or detachment, or whatever it is, all the labels that, you know, we're starting to give to understand that brokenness. We've come to heal it. So let's all step forward, heal ourselves, and step further than that, and try and heal somebody else, or at least help somebody to be in the space that they are, and to encourage them.
And it's to grow from the trauma. It's not to let the trauma actually pull you backwards and pull you down. You know, we can blame and blame and blame and hold ourselves back, but it's never going to take us anywhere.
Yeah. Unbelievable. Toby, thank you. Really, this has been a very meaningful conversation, and I think a conversation that needs to continue. And we always
appreciate you giving
us the time and the space to come on the show. That was Toby Steiner. This is Adel Kozulski signing off, along with
Peggy Stern.
This is the Healthy You, Wealthy You show, and this is 101.9 Chai FM.